Now we're holding on Nun Zion Omid Beis, the second line from the bottom. The Mishnah had said that when it comes to Hekdesh, we have different rules that apply that are different than with property of a Hevyet. And among them is, we said Shem Chinam Ein Nishba V'Cholo. We said that a Shem Chinam of something of Hekdesh, if something goes wrong in the type of thing, whereas a Shem Chinam, he would normally have to swear, for example, if a thing was lost or stolen, and then he's potter from paying. If it's Hekdesh, then he doesn't swear. Because we said all those dinim apply to Re'ehu, which means a fellow Yid, therefore not Hekdesh. So the Gemara says a Ramin, I have a contradiction from a Mishnah in Shkolin. Now you have like this, every year they collect the Matzah Shekel, and people would send, not everybody brings their matzah shekel in person to Yerushalayim, of course. People would send it with a messenger. In particular, now what you have is like this. So people would send their matzah shekel from all over. Three times a year, they had to get, it was supposed to be that it would get to the Beis HaMikdash by Rosh Chodesh Nisan, because Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the beginning of the Beis HaMikdash's fiscal year. The karbonis of that year are supposed to be bought using the new money that came in. Three times during the year, they would go into the chamber, into the room where all the money was kept, and they would send somebody in over there, and they would take out boxes of coins, and then they would go and spend those on the different operating expenses of the Beis HaMikdash. They needed them to buy the materials for Karbanos. They needed them to pay certain people's salaries. We learned about Ksubas, for example, people who taught the Kohenim how to shecht, and then various other Dayanim and other people who are important for the functioning of the Beis HaMikdash. This is all aside from Bedek HaBayis. You have Bedek HaBayis, which is actual physical upkeep and repair of the Beis HaMikdash. That's something else that came out of other money. But here we're talking about the Trumas HaLishka, the money that was taken out of the chamber where they kept the Matzah Shekel. So three times a year, before Pesach, before Shavuos, and before Sukkot, they would take money out of there. And as the Gemara is going to go on to say, each time they would have in mind that it's also going to cover the money that has not yet arrived in the Beis HaMikdash, that's on its way, with the idea that way everybody, no matter where they live in the world, is going to be included in the Korbanos Tzibur that are being bought with that money. So now, the Mishnah describes, B'nei ha'ir sheshocho es shekleihen, you have a people from a certain city sent their matzah shekels to the Beis HaMikdash, the nignavu she'avdu, and on the way they were stolen or they were lost. So it depends. If Rashi explains, first let's explain according to Rashi, if when they came to a din Torah, so now they need to take the shliach to a din Torah, because the shliach is either a shom chinam or a shom sachar, as we're going to go on to see. So, and if it's a shom chinam, then normally they have to swear, and if it's shom sachar, then normally for gneiv v'aveda they have to pay. But we're going to see in the Gemara soon what the details are. Anyway, so if they go to a din Torah with the shliach after nitrma hatruma, after one of those times when they already took money out of the collection boxes in the Beis HaMikdash, so then at that point, so then at that point, Yishborim Magizborim. So now, who do the Shluchim swear to that they weren't Peshaya? They swear to the Gizborim, to the treasurers of the Beis HaMikdash. Because at this point, since, as the Gemara is going to say soon, when they take the Truma, they have in mind also the coins that have not yet been, the coins that have not yet reached the Beis HaMikdash, and they include also Al HaOvud, they include also anything that may have been lost on the way, because they want those people to have their share in the Korbanos as well, after all. So now at this point, in effect, that money already belongs to Hekdesh. Therefore, the Gizborim are therefore the Gizbars, the Baal Din over here, the Gizbar is the one who, who is it in effect that's taking the Shluchim to Beis Din, would be the Gizborim. They'd be saying, look, you know, Hekdesh owns this money, and we want you to swear that you weren't careless with it. So there's our question. You see that you do swear to Hekdesh, not like our Mishnah. So that's the point. But first, we're going to quote the rest of the Mishnah. V'im lav nishiboyin levnei ha'ir. If not, if it was before nitzer v'hatruma, so now that meaning that the people of the city found out what happened, that the money was lost or stolen or whatever, before the truma was even taken out. So now at that point, the money doesn't yet belong to Hekdesh. It still belongs to the people of the city. So and when they take truma, when they do take the truma, when they do take the money out in the boxes out of the chamber over there, they're not having them in mind, because they know the people are going to have to do other are going to have to designate and give other matzah shekel. So therefore, it's the bnei ha'ir. So nishbarim the bnei ha'ir. It's the people of the city who sent these shluchim, who are the bala dinim, and therefore the shluchim would swear to them. Now that's all according to Rashi. Tosfos has some difficulties with that, and so Tosfos explains rather that im nitzrumat truma nishbarim lagizbarin actually means that the money already came to the money already came to the gizbarim. So the money came to the gizbarim, and then it was nigna. So now at that point, since it was even if it was before nitzrumat truma, the owners have already been yotze, because they already gave it, and when it already came to the hand of the gizbar, and the gizbar, when he goes and takes the truma, when he goes and takes the boxes of money out before Pesach, he has in mind what was lost and what was already collected and already and is already so Tosfos learns that in that case then, so what we mean is so now in our Mishnah, in other words, we're saying so even though so what we mean is when we say in the Gemara, in other words, when we say that Gogri, etc., what we mean is that they have in mind anything that already came to the Gizbar and then was lost before the Truma was actually taken. And then they also have in mind Gogri, what is in the hand of the Shliach on the way, what's coming on the way and hadn't reached yet. Even though it was lost after they after they already took the truma. So according to Tosfos, in other words, in short, therefore, so in the first case, so if the Gneva took place where the Mishnah says truma, meaning that at the time when they took truma, the shkolim was still already in the hand were already in the hands of the shliach, then the people of the city were already been yotze. That were already yotze, therefore they're not the bala dinim. Therefore, the shluchim would swear to the gizbarim. If the gneva, so that's the point. Rashi says we're talking about when the bnei ha'ir found out what happened and when they take them to Beis Din. According to Tosfos, it's not when they found out; it's when the theft actually took place, with the or the law of the loss. We have to find out when that was relative to nitzrumat truma, and that will depend, therefore, whether the money is already considered to belong to Hekdesh and they already had it in mind when they took the truma or not, and therefore they're going to swear to the Gizbarim or to the people, respectively. The Mishnah continues, Nimtzu, if later on they find these lost matzah shekel, Oshech Ziruma Ganovim, or if the Ganovim return the money that they stole, Eilu v'Eilu Shkolim, then both the old and the new are considered Shkolim, because, in other words, you have like this, because we're saying the first Shkolim were lost, therefore the people of the city had to give other Matzah Shekel, in the second case, Nishborim l'vnei ha'ir Shoklin tachtehen. So now the people of the city have had to give new matzah shekel. Now, when we find the old one, we don't say it's called hekdesh patos. We don't say that it was a mistaken hekdesh, and therefore it's not matzah shekel. It is matzah shekel, and both of them are given to the Beis Hamikdash. The ein olam lahem l'shana haba, and it doesn't count towards next year. Meaning they can't say, well, this year we gave two matzah shekel, therefore next year we're potter. No, both of them end up going to hekdesh. The Rashi brings later on down on the Amud that there are two separate sets of collection boxes in the Beis Hamikdash and everywhere else where they would collect matzah shekel. They're called tiklin chavatin and tiklin atikin. Tiklin chavatin means new shkolim, atikin means old. So tiklin chavatin is for every year it's matzah shekel. And tikkun atikin is if a person didn't give matzah shekel last year, then they give it now. So now, in this, in a similar vein of the two groups of shkolim, one of them goes into tikkun chavatin and is used for this year's korbanos, and the other one goes into tikkun atikin and is used for various other expenses of the Beis Hamikdash in the city of Yerushalayim. The point is, in other words, that we see that we have a case where the shluchim swear to the gizbarim, and even, in other words, we're dealing with money that already is considered to belong to Hekdesh, because they already did the they already took the truma salishka, having in mind that having in mind that money, and it's considered already to be in the possession of Hekdesh, and we're saying that the Shluchim swear. So we're saying that the so in other words, on the face of it, so on the now on Mishnah said that they don't swear to Hekdesh, that a Shem Achinam doesn't swear to Hekdesh. So almost Shmuel Hachab and Noisa Sachar Askin. Shmuel says, because the difference is this Mishnah that we quoted from Shkolim is talking about a Shomer Sachar. So he's not swearing in order to be potter from paying, because a Shomer Sachar is in fact chayav for Gnev of Aveda. Vinishborin little scharim. They're swearing because they want to be able to collect their fee. They were hired to guard this money on the way to Yerushalayim, and now they want to collect their fee. Well, the question is, why are they collecting their fee? Well, first of all, the question before we get to how they're collecting their fee. The whole point was they were hired in order to guard the money, and they obviously didn't because it was stolen or lost. So we'll get back to that soon. But first, we have to ask if all they're going to Beis Din for is in order to collect their fee. Then first of all, then why are they swearing to the gizborim? They should be swearing to the bnei ha'ir. Either way, they should be swearing to bnei ha'ir, because either way, it's not the gizborim who are paying them; it's the people of the city who hired them and are going to be paying them. So now, if they're trying to collect their wages, then they should be going to the people of the city. And the answer is Amar Rabba, nishborim levnei ha'ir b'maimad gizborim. You're right. It doesn't mean they ever swear to the gizborim. It means they swear to the people of the city that they weren't careless. That they weren't careless. Now, how it is that they're collecting their fee? If in fact it was stolen, we'll get back to it in a second. But they do it in the presence of the gizborim, because after all, in this case, it's Hekdesh that loses out, because Hekdesh was expecting to get in this money, and now they don't, and therefore they have a shortfall. So it's true. The gizborim. It's true as far as collecting their fee. So it's like this. As far as paying, of course, they being Shomer Sachar, and there was Gnev of Aveda, if we assume it was regular Gnev of Aveda, then they're going to have to pay. Then they're going to have to pay the Gizbarim. And that's that. That makes up the shortfall for the Beis Mikdash. Meanwhile, though, they want to collect their wages. So you're right, the Bnei Ha'ir are the Bala Din for that, but they swear in the presence of the Gizbarim, Ki Hechad Loi Nachshadinu, this way they don't suspect them. Now there could be several possible there could be several possible people that we're talking about suspecting. We want to have that you could have that the gizborim shouldn't suspect the people of the city that they didn't designate Matzah Shekel. You could have that they'd be choshed the shluchim that maybe they didn't do their job properly or whatever. So they need to swear. So they're swearing to the people of the city, Rabbi is explaining, but they're swearing in the presence of the Gizbarim, so that the Gizbarim themselves don't suspect the people of the city of being careless and not sending in their matzah shekel. The inami or another possibility, in order that the Gizbarim shouldn't think that the people of the city were pusheya in sending a shomer chinam rather than a shomer sachar. Like this, if the shomer chinam. If it was a shomer chinam, it would be careless on the part of the people of the city. The gizborim could well tell them, "Look, you realize this is an important thing. You bring it to the Beis Mikdash. What are you having somebody bring it only for free? You should have hired somebody, and then you have a higher degree of responsibility." So like this. Therefore, the shluchim are in fact shomer sachar, says Rabba. Shmuel had said we're talking about Shomer Sachar, and Rabba is explaining that now they swear to the people of the city in the presence of the Gizbarim, so that the Gizbarim know that the people of the city in fact did everything they could. They hired a Shomer Sachar. There wasn't anything more they could do. Well, the question is, the problem is the Mishnah says that they were stolen or lost. Now, a Shomer Sachar is chayav for those kinds of things. So here also, the shalumi le mishalmi. So fine, you're going to say that maybe, you're going to say that because, again, we learned in the Mishnah, in our Mishnah, that when it comes to Hekdesh, you don't have the normal rules of Shomerim. So therefore, maybe the Shomer Sachar doesn't have to pay Hekdesh. But certainly they should be forfeiting their pay. They were hired to guard this against Geneva Vaveda. They fell down on the job. So why should they be suing the people of the city to collect their fee when they didn't do their job properly? So the answer is Amar Rabba, Nignavu Belistim Mizuyam. The answer is that Nignavu doesn't always mean that it was stolen by regular Ganovim. It can be that it was robbed from them by armed robbers. As we learned in Baba Kama, an armed robber is considered somewhere between a Ganav and a Gazlan. A classic Gazlan is where he grabs it out of the other person's hand. A Ganav is where he hides out and takes it stealthily. A Listim Mizuyan hides out by the side of the road in order to jump out on people and rob them. So therefore, to that extent, he can be considered like a Ganav. On the other hand, though, he's considered it's an onus. It's not a regular case of Gneva, and a Shem of Socher is Potter on onus. And similarly, Ovdu would not mean that it was lost in the regular way, as in that it fell out or something, that it fell out of their pocket or whatever. It means they were bringing it on a boat and the boat sank, which again is an onus. So now Shema Sacha is potter from onus. So they should be in fact entitled to collect their fee. We guarded it against regular Gneva and regular Aveda. Onus were potter as Shema Sacha. And therefore, in fact, we should be entitled to collect our fee. So that's what's going on over here then. So we're saying that these shomim are shomer socher. So now, depending whether nitra ma'atruma or loin nitra ma'atruma is whether the money is considered to belong to the people of the city or to the gizbarim. Either way, we're saying that when they also want to collect their fee, now when it comes to swearing to the people of the city, that they do, but they do it in the when Hektish stands to lose out, namely in this case where Hektish is not going to be getting this year's Matzah Shekel from this city, and they were expecting to, and they already took money from the Lishka, having in mind that it's going to cover that as well. So in that case, they would swear to the Gizborim, and in the other case, they would swear to the people of the city in the presence of the Gizborim, because again, so the Gizborim don't think that they were careless or failed to send the Matzah Shekel altogether, or so forth. So that's the situation. So therefore, it doesn't contradict our Mishnah that says that you don't, that a Shema Sacher, that a Shema Chinam doesn't swear to Hektish, because here we're talking about a Shema Sacher, and he's not swearing to be Potter. He's swearing to collect his payment. Okay, all that is one answer. Rabbi Yechanan gives a different answer to reconcile that Mishnah with our Mishnah. Homani Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yechanan says that Mishnah in Shkolim goes specifically like Rabbi Shimon. In our Mishnah, he had said that there's a difference between Kodshim Shechai Bachu Yosan and She'en Chai Bachu Yosan. There's a difference between Kodshim Harei Olai and Harei Zu, where you say Harei Olai, that I obligate to bring myself to bring a korban, then it means the Achrayus is on him. And if later on he designates an animal for that purpose and it gets lost or stolen or becomes a Baal Mum or what have you, then he has to designate a different animal instead. So that's Chai Bachri Yosan. Then you have Kodshim She'en Chai Bachri Yosan, when he says Harei Zu, and to begin with, he says this animal should be a korban. And then if anything happens to that animal, he's not responsible to give a different one instead. Now, Reb Shimon in our Mishnah had said that when it comes to Kodshim She'en Bachri Yosan, because you're responsible to make it up, to give a different animal instead, therefore, to that extent, it's considered the property of a Hedyot, and therefore you have to. And therefore, the regular rules of a shomer would apply to that, says Reb Shimon. And in a Mishnah in Shavuos, he adds also not only is there no einah, but there is a shavuah for them, just like any regular nichse hediyah. So we don't need to say that the Mishnah in Shkolim about people sending their matzah shekel is talking about a shomer sacher, and it's talking about collecting their fee and so on and so forth. It can be talking about a shomer chinam, and he's swearing that he wasn't pesheya. And that's not a problem, because in the case where they're going to have to give other matzah shekel, it's called shem shachai bach riyosan. So therefore, nishboi nalein, you would swear on them. Okay, you want to ask totenach adshel nitruma truma. Okay, well that explains before the truma was taken, before they took the first collection of the truma out of that chamber. Then you can say at that point the money is not yet considered to belong to Hektish. Because and at that point, if it turns out that the money is lost and they take the person to Beis Din and so forth, then they are going to have to give all the matzah shekel. So therefore, it is chayav b'achriyusa. Mishum nitruma hatruma. But what about after the truma has been taken? Where at that point, when they take out the first truma from the chamber over there and use it for the expenses of the Beis Hamikdash, they have in mind, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, all of the money that's yet to come, all the money that's on its way and that got lost on the way, and so on and so forth. And therefore, the loss is on Hekdash. The people of the city are not going to have to give other matzah shekel. So then, Kodshim Shein Chai Bach Riyasin Ninu. So then at that point, it's Kodshim that he's not Chai Bach Riyasin. So even Rav Shimon should agree that in that case, there's no Shavua, and yet the Mishnah in Shkaldim says that there's a Shavua. D'Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Termin Ala Ovud, when they take out the Machzah Shekel, when they take out the boxes of coins from the Lishka over there, they have in mind Ala Ovud, they have anything that was lost on the way, Bala Govri, and on what was already collected, and the Shliach is on his way and has not yet reached the Beis Hamikdash, Bala Osid the Govis, and about what's yet to be collected, note somebody who has not even sent his Machzah Shekel yet. Rashi explains, you have, everybody is supposed to be sending their Machzah Shekel and Adar. This is why we read Parshas Shkolim on the Shabbos before of Rosh Chodesh Adar, but now you could have a person who was an Oynas and he wasn't able to send in an Adar, so then he would send it in, so he'd send it anytime during the year, and it would still go towards that year's Korbanah. So they, again, it would go in the Tiklan Chavitin box, Rashi explains, it would go in the new Shkolim box because he gave it this year. If it happened for an entire year, he hadn't given Matzah Shekel, and then the following year, he gives to make up for last year, then that would go in Tiklan Atikin in the box labeled Old Shkolim, and that would go for various other expenses of the Beis Hamikdash. Anyway, the point is, so they have in mind, each time they take the Truma, they have in mind three times a year, before Pesach, before Sukkos, and before Shavuos, and before Sukkos, they have in mind all of this, Ala Ovud, Bala Govri, Bala Osid Ligovis, and they have that in mind, meaning, in other words, so therefore, so now at this point, Rashi explains, if somebody brings his Matzah Shekel, so not even if he brings it the following year, if he brings it after the third Truma is taken a little bit, is taken around Rosh Hashanah, either right before or right after Rosh Hashanah, in preparation for Sukkos. From then on, if anybody brings his Matzah Shekel for the year, then it goes into Tiklan Atikin, and it goes, it actually brings from a Mishnah in Shkalim, that it goes, among other things, towards repairing the walls and the towers of Yerushalayim. Anyway, the point is that again, when they take the truma, they have in mind all of that. They have in mind that they have in mind to cover all of the matzah shekel that has already been collected, that's yet to be collected anytime before the third truma, and that's on its way, and so forth. So the loss is hektishes, and the owner, the people who sent the matzah shekel, are not going to have to pay. So it's kodshim she'in chai b'achriyosan. Even Reb Shimon should hold that that's considered money of hektish, and therefore that the rules of our Mishnah and apply, and therefore there's no aynah and there's no shavua. So what is Rabbi Yochanan saying? That the Mishnah in Shkolim, which refers to the Shluchim swearing, is going to be according to Reb Shimon. That only works for half of that Mishnah. Here we have, as we said before, we have the Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, what it means, Termin ala Ovud, ala Govri, ala Osid Ligovus. Rashi explains it means including what was lost on the way. Tosfos says that what it means is that ala Ovud means where it already reached the Gizbar, and then it was lost before it reached the chamber, before they took the Truma. Ala Govri would be what's in the hands of the Shliach and is coming on the way, ala Osid Ligovus, and what's yet to be collected later on, and hasn't yet been given to the Shliach at the time when they take the Truma. So again, the question is, if you're going to say Rabbi Yochanan that Mishnah in Shkolim is appointed Rabbi Shimon, then how does that fit with the fact that Rabbi Shimon is only saying that happens by Kodshim Shechai Bach Riyosan, where here we're talking about Kodshim She'in Chai Bach Riyosan as well. Ela, Omer Rabbi Elazar, so Rabbi Elazar says, no, rather, the Shavua is in fact, we are talking a regular Shavua of Shomrim, and we are talking about a Shema Chinam, but Shavuos are Takonas Chachamim. This Shavua is a special Takona of the Chachamim, Shaloyu B'nei Adam, Mezalz L'Mekdeshes, so that people are not careless with Hekdesh. Meaning, minat Torah, it's true, a person should not have to swear when he's handling money of hekdesh because he's a shem achinam. So again, Rabbi Lozer is still explaining, like Rabbi Yochanan, that we're talking about a shem achinam in that Mishnah in Shkalim, not like Shmuel had said, we're talking about a shem asachar and we're talking about him swearing in order to collect his payment, but rather we're talking about a shem achinam and he's swearing to be potter from paying. But in this particular case, we don't want people to be careless with hekdesh, and therefore we made a special takana that they should swear. We said in the Mishnah, Noisis Socher Enim Mashalim, we said that a Shomer Socher on property of Hekdesh does not pay for the regular Neiv of Aveda that a regular Shomer Socher would have to pay. Romilei Rav Yosef Bachoma L'Rabba, Rav Yosef Bachoma, who was Rabba's father, who was Rava's father, so Rava's father asked Rabba, Tnam, we learned in our Mishnah, Noisis Socher Enim Mashalim, we're saying that a Shomer Socher doesn't pay for Gnev of Aveda, or a mini, but I have a contradiction from a Braisa. Hasilcher is a poil. If a gizbar of Hekdesh hires a worker and pays him with money of Hekdesh, Lishmer is a para, to watch the para adruma, so they bought a para adruma, and it's going to be a little while before they need it, because the para adruma is not always available, so they buy it when it first becomes available, and then meanwhile they need somebody to watch it, make sure nobody puts a yoke on it, make sure it doesn't develop a mum, or they hire somebody to watch a child. Now you have the Mishnah in Masechta Para explains in detail that when it came to part of the process of preparing the Para Adruma is they want the Kohen Gadol himself have to be sprinkled with Para Adruma water before he does the whole thing of preparing the next Para Adruma. Now they wanted to find, for that purpose, they wanted to find people who had never become Tomei. Now, your average person has become Tomei sometime during their lifetime. So instead, they had special arrangement. Some mothers would come. We learned about this briefly in Ksumas. Some mothers would come to special areas in Yerushalayim that were built in such a way where it's impossible for them to become Tomei with anything buried deep underground. They have these chatseres built with arches, with vaults on top of vaults to block any Tumah from coming to the surface. They would give birth over there, and these children would be raised there. And eventually, when they're 7 or 8 years old, then they would take them down to the Shiloyach spring in a special way, and they would fill up cups of water and put the ashes in them, and then it would be available to sprinkle on the Kohen Gadol. So now you have Lishmer Satinik is to watch these children that they don't become Tomei. Or Lishmer Sazroyim. Or a third possibility is that Hekdesh is hiring somebody to watch seeds that are growing. Now Rashi here says two possibilities. One is we're talking about they would plant the wheat for the Korban HaOmer and for the Shtei HaLechem sometime, in particular the Omer, which is very much in Yom HaYomer now that we're in Sfiras HaOmer. So they would plant the barley for the Omer 70 days before Pesach. Now, during that time, during those 70 days, they need to hire somebody to watch it to make sure that somebody doesn't take it or to make sure that animals don't trample it or whatever. That's Rashi's first explanation. The second explanation is we're talking specifically during Shemitah year. During Shemitah year, of course, they can't plant. They need to rely on Sfichim, on plants that grow on their own, to be able to find the barley for the Omer and similarly the wheat for the Shtei HaLechem. So when they find a stand of barley or a stand of wheat, that is growing on its own, meaning the inevitably you have when you're harvesting the grain from the previous year, inevitably some grain falls to the ground, and eventually the following year it sprouts. That's called svichim. So now midrabanan, by the way, you're not supposed to eat svichim of grain or vegetables because the chacham were concerned a person might go and actually plant them himself and then claim that they grew on their own. But here we're talking about to use them for karbanos, and therefore the chacham waived that rule. But now you need somebody to guard those svichim and tell people, please don't take them; they're reserved for the Bais Mikdash. Tosfos actually points out that you have a problem over there. If you guard produce during Shemitah, then you're not allowed to eat it. So then we know anything that's used for korbanos has to be something that a yid would be allowed to eat. So how does that work over here? So Tosfos explained that it doesn't mean if somebody physically wanted to take it, he wouldn't actually prevent him. He would inform people, you should know this is reserved for Hekdesh, and automatically people would hold back from taking it themselves. So, but it's not like he would physically prevent them from taking it, Tosfos says, because it's true that wouldn't work within the dinim of Shemitah. Other Rishonim explain differently that The Rashash in Akron points out that maybe it's only a problem when the owner of the field himself is watching it. That would be when it's also to eat, but not when somebody else is watching it. In this case, Hekdesh is hiring Shrevenim, so therefore it's not really the same thing. Bechlal, an interesting question is when you have fruit that was grown during Shemitah, with the Isser, for example, you have in the case of fruit, you're allowed to eat what grows during Shemitah. Of course, you have to have something to eat, but you're not allowed to cultivate it yourself. If somebody does cultivate it, is it in fact also to eat or not? There's a whole question which comes up, of course, every year in Eretz Yisrael with produce that comes from Eretz Yisrael during Shemitah. So the point is, so here we're talking about, so again, Hekdesh hired a worker to watch any of these things. The Ramban actually explains, we don't actually mean necessarily that we're talking about Hekdesh hiring somebody. The Ramban explains, we're talking about a person hires a worker to watch his cow or to babysit his children or to watch his grain growing. Anyway, the point then, and then in that case, the question is not so much from Hekdesh. The question is, we learned in the Mishnah that the dinim of Shomim, the regular dinim of Shomim, don't apply to Karka. And here, where the grain and the taps are obviously then a pora and a tinik is not Karka. So sure, the dinim of Shomim would apply to them like they don't apply to anything else. But the question is really more on the when it says he's watching seeds that are growing to make sure, again, that no animals or people take them or trample them or whatever, where that's Mechoba la Karka, and therefore it should be la Karka. Anyway, the Braisa says, so a person hired these workers for any of these things, for Hekdesh, like Rashi says, or for Chulin, like the Ramban says, Ein noisin lo schar Shabbos, you don't pay him for Shabbos, you can't pay him for Shabbos, because you can't take pay for work that you do on Shabbos, even when in this case, by the way, we're not talking about the work itself is intrinsically ulcer. You're perfectly allowed to babysit on Shabbos. You're perfectly allowed to sit there and watch seeds on Shabbos, but it's schar Shabbos, and for that reason alone, it would be ulcer. So you're not allowed to. Lefichach ein achrayus Shabbos olav. Therefore, if something happens to them on Shabbos, the shomer is not responsible because he wasn't shomer at that time. On the other hand, hoya schir Shabbos. But if he was hired for an entire week and he's being paid by the week, schir chodesh, or he's being paid by the month, schir shana, schir shavua, or he's being hired by the year or by the 7 year period, noisin lois schar Shabbos. Then you do pay him schar Shabbos because. Then it's called Bahavla. You're including the pay for Shabbos together with the pay for the week. And this is a practical din, Hilchos Shabbos, that if you're hiring somebody for a job, which is going to be over Shabbos as well, you have to pay him in a lump sum. So you pay him, for example, monthly, and then all the Shabbosim of the month are included in it. In the case of Balei Kriya and Chazonim, and whenever you have the Heter, that they do is that you're paying them for their preparation before Shabbos. And that's included, and then included in that is the fact that they're doing the actual chazonus or whatever on Shabbos. Anyway, so lefichach achrayus Shabbos olav. Therefore, the Braisa says because you're paying them, therefore the achrayus of anything that happens on Shabbos is going to be on him because he is in fact being hired for weekdays and Shabbos as well. Now my lav l'shalim. Now when we say achrayus Shabbos olav, don't we mean that if something goes wrong, if there was a gneva or aveda on Shabbos, then he would have to pay? So Rabbi Yosef Bar Chama is asking Rabbah. So you see that a Shomer Sacher does have to pay Hekdesh. Or again, according to the Ramban, the question is that you see that even by karka, even by seeds that are attached to the ground and growing from it, that you have to pay. So we see that a Shomer Sacher does have to pay. So Rabbah answers, Loi lahafsid schara. No, we mean that lachrayus Shabbos olav in the sense that he doesn't get paid. Because he didn't do the job properly, but either way he'd be potter because we're saying Hekdesh and Karka are potter from a Shemesacha pain. So Rabbi Yosef Bar Chama asks the Hochi Reisha de Katoni. Well, then what about the Reisha of the Braisa that says in Achrayas Shabbos Olav that says he's not responsible for what happens on Shabbos? Hochi Namid left the Lahafsid Schorei. Are you going to say that they are also in Achrayas Shabbos Olav mean that he's still entitled to his pay? There's no pay anyway. He's anyway not getting paid on Shabbos. The Braisa had said that you don't pay him for the part of the work that he does on Shabbos. So therefore, there's nothing to talk about. There's no pay for him to forfeit for us to be talking about whether Achrayos Olav or not. Obviously, it has to be talking about the Achrayos of the actual Gneva of Aveda. And the Braisa is saying,
in the sefer that achrayus Shabbos olav, which means that he does have to pay. Not like our Mishnah that says that you don't, that a shomer sacher doesn't pay on hekdesh and on karka. Ishtim. So Rabbi was quiet and he didn't have an answer. Omalei, then he says to Rabbi Yosef, have you heard anything about this? I'm stumped. Do you taka have an answer? Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef Achama says, yes. Hochi, Omer Rav Sheshes, Bishakonu Miyadei. Rav Sheshes said that we're talking about, the Braise is talking about where they made a kinyan. They made, you don't have to make a kinyan for things like that, of making a shomer, but he can make a kinyan that if something goes wrong, he's going to pay. So it's true, when it comes to Hekdesh, normally a Shema Sacher doesn't have to pay, and when it comes to Karka, normally a Shema Sacher doesn't have to pay. But Konu Miyodu, when they made a Kinyan, that he is in fact Chayev, well fine, a person can be Machayev himself with a Kinyan Sudur, on whatever he wants. So therefore, that would be the case. And the same Bishakonu Miyodu, and Rabbi Yochanan said the same thing, that it means when they made a Kinyan, and he was Machayev himself voluntarily, it's something that he would not ordinarily be Chayev in. So Tosfos actually points out a kinyan might not even be necessary on the face of it. On the face of it, all you need is a tznai. But here you're talking about that here he would have been taught to even from a shavua. And now you're going to the opposite extreme and being mechayev him to pay, then that he's not going to do without a kinyan. Okay. So that answers that. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Omer Kodshim Shechai Bachu Yosef Yesh Lahen. We said Rav Shimon had distinguished between Kodshim, whether a person has Chai Bachu Yosef, like we said before, when a person says Hare Olai, where now he's obligated to bring the Korban. It can also be, by the way, for example, a Chantos or an Osham, where he's obligated to bring it regardless. So then, because he has a monetary interest in it, namely that he's going to have to make up for the korban if it gets lost or becomes balmum or what have you, then therefore it's considered mum and hedya, and therefore Rav Shimon says the dinim of kefal and shvua and of kefal and abav chamisha and so forth and so forth all apply to it. He says yesh lain ainah v'she'en echay bachrus and ain lain ainah. Whereas if ain echay bachru your son, if it's a voluntary korban, and he said harei zu, so therefore he's not chay bachru your son. Therefore it's not considered mum and hedya, and there's no ainah when it comes to it. So the Gemara says, Toni Tana Kamedir of Yitzchok Ba'Abba. A Tana taught the following Braisa in front of Rabbi Yitzchok Ba'Abba. The Braisa says, Reb Shimon is saying, Kodshim Shechayev Bachru Yosef Chayev, when it comes to Kodshim, that he's Chayev Bachru Yosef, that he would have to make up for the missing carbon, then there's a, he's Chayev, then the Shomer is a, so then the shomer is chayev. So now what happened is if the shomer, so actually the context of the braisa is talking about the din that we learned about in Baba Kama, that if a shomer denies falsely that something as far as the pikadon, he claims I never received it or I returned it to you, or he claims that something happened to it that would make him potter, such as gneva aveda for shachinam, etc. So we learned in Baba Kama that later on when he does tshuva, if he swears falsely on it, we learned that if he later on he does tshuva, then he has to pay a keren plus a choymash and he has to bring a korban asha. So this braisa says, when it comes to if the shomer is watching kodshim chay bach yosan chayev, then he would be chayev that keren v'choymish and the osham shani kodabed bash shem v'chichesh, because then you can apply to those what the pasuk is saying when he denied something against Hashem. The expression in the pasuk is nefesh kisechta umal amal b'Hashem. When a person does wrongly and he trespasses against Hashem, v'chichesh b'amisoy, and he denies a claim from a fellow yid. So now this the braisa is saying, since you have the word v'chichesh and he denies between the words b'Hashem and b'amisoy, so therefore we can darshan that there's two kinds of denial. There's a denial where he's denying a claim of a korban that belongs exclusively to Hashem, and then we apply to that b'Hashem v'chichesh, he denied a claim of a korban that belongs exclusively to Hashem, v'she'en echay bach riyosan, and the braisa continues, when he's not chay bach riyosan, when it's a korban where he's not going to have to make up the shortfall, potter, then he would be potter from the korban for the false shvur, shani korban b'amisa b'chichesh, because then we apply what the pasuk is saying, that he denied a claim only from a fellow person. So in other words, because it doesn't belong to Hekdesh. Amalei, sort of Yitzchak tells him, Klape Laya, which way is this going? Which way? Laya means which way? Klape means which way? Laya means where? So where is this Braisa going? Meaning, in other words, it seems to be backwards. He says, Ipcha Mistabra. On the contrary, the logic is the other way around. When Enechai Bachriyosan, it belongs more to Hashem, because then that means the lost, so to speak, is on Hashem. He voluntarily was going to bring a certain korban, and now Hashem, so to speak, losing out of it because in the end he's not bringing the korban. And on the other hand, when Chaya Bachriyosan, he's going to end up bringing another korban. Therefore, we can say that's more of a chichesh ba'amisa. He's denying a claim from a fellow yid, because that fellow yid is going to have to make up that. He's going to have to make up that shortfall. He's going to have to bring another korban. So the braisa seems to be backwards. In fact, it actually points out that the braisa is backwards in a double way, kind of. First of all, that kochim shechay b'achru yusan should be more from b'amisa v'chichesh, and kochim she'en chay b'achru yusan should be from v'ashem v'chichesh. And second of all, there's more reason to be mechayev him by hedya, because we're saying by hektish you usually potter. So the braisa is doubly backwards. In fact, the Maharam Shif, that's why they says that that's Rashi understands. That's why Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'aba is using a double expression. Klape laya, which way is this going? Ipcha mistabra, it seems the other way around, because there were two things in the braisa that seem to be backwards. Omalais, the Tana asks, Isme, should I delete this braisa from my repertoire of braisas? Because obviously it's mistaken. Amalais, Rabbi Yitzchak tells him, no, you don't have to remove it. Hochi karma, but you should understand for the future that the braisa means like this. Kodshim shechaye bachru yosan. It means that if he's chaye bachru yosan, and then the shomer denies it, chayev, then the shomer is chayev in that korban because they belong to Amisai, the Israbu mivah Hashem b'chichesh. On the contrary, you should argue that you want to argue that when we say dichtiv v'ashem b'chichesh, we don't mean that's a reason to be mechayev him. What we mean is you would think on the basis of the words v'ashem b'chichesh that he should be potter because it belongs to hektish, but nevertheless, because there is also a side in it which belongs to amiso, to a fellow yid, therefore he's chayev to swear. On the other hand, if he's not chayev b'achru yosan potter, then that shomer would be potter from the shvur. This is an exception to the rule of chichesh ba'amisa, because they're not truly the maskin's property because he's not chayev b'achru yosan. So in other words, the braisa is not giving reasons why he should be chayev and why he should be potter respectively. Just the opposite. The braisa is saying you would think in the first case he should be potter because it's primarily Ba'ashem, and we're saying no, there is an element of Ba'amisa in there as well. And in the second one, you would think he's potter because he's chayev because Ba'amisa, and we're saying no, it's not considered Ba'amisa because it's not chayev b'achrisa. The Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yehuda Oim Afam Moichos. Now, the Mishnah had mentioned, again, you have Avodim, Shtoris, Kaukois, and Hekdesh, to which the dinim of Einah don't apply. Now, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Oim Afam Moichos, Sefer Torah, Magolos of Behema, Einah Einah, Rabbi Yehuda says that also when a person sells a Sefer Torah or a diamond, Magolos would be actually a pearl, whatever, a pearl, or Behema, Einah Einah, then Rabbi Yehuda says there's no din of Einah, the regular dinim of Einah don't apply to them as either. So why is that? Tanya Rabbi Yehuda, Afa Moichos Sefer Torah, Ein Lo'ina. Rabbi Yehuda says a person sells a Sefer Torah, there's no Ein Lo'ina in it. Lefishen Kates the Domel, because there's no limit to its value. A Sefer Torah is priceless, so therefore you can't put a price on it. So therefore you can't say that there was Ein Lo'ina when he overpaid for it. Or behema magolus, ein lahem Ein Lo'ina. What about as far as animals and as far as pearls? There's no Ein Lo'ina. Nesha Adam Roitzel Lezalgon. Because a person often would want to buy another one to match one that he already has. He already has an animal of a certain strength. Now he wants to pair it up with another animal that has similar strength. It actually points out otherwise you're putting too much of the burden on the stronger animal and therefore weakens the stronger one. And the same way with pearls. You have pearls of a certain kind, and now you want another one that matches them. So therefore, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda is saying a person would indeed be willing to overpay for these kinds of things. In fact, the Ramban points out, now we did learn we did learn earlier in the parak that a nah applies both to the seller and to the buyer. You can have those a nah on the buyer's part if he underpays for the thing. So then Rabban says, when Rabbi Yehuda says ain lahin a nah for these three things, he's talking about in terms of selling. Obviously, in terms of buying, there would be a nah because of all this logic that we're saying that the same Torah is priceless and that the behema and so forth he wants to match up would apply. Obviously, those are going to apply to the moicher. So therefore, so what we mean is Einayna means, in other words, that if he overcharges for them, Rabbi Yehuda holds that's not a problem because you can say a person would voluntarily overpay for them for these reasons. Lois, the Chumrat, answer back to him, so why limit it to only those three things? There's lots of other things that a person would want to pair up with other ones or to match them with things that he already has. And obviously, we still say Einayna applies to them. Rabbi Yehuda, so what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? Hani chashivile v'hani lechashivile. It's true, a person may want to match all kinds of things, but usually a person is not going to be willing to overpay a lot in order to be able to do that. Only when it comes to animals and pearls, then it's particularly chaviv and particularly important and chaviv to him, so therefore he's willing to pay, to be willing to overpay for them. So the Gemara says v'ad kama. So up to what point does Rabbi Yehuda hold that a nah wouldn't apply to those things? And the answer is up to equal to their value. Meaning, in other words, that if he charges twice their real value, then there's not a nah. But if it's any more than that, then even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that a nah applies to those things. We learned the other day. There's machlokas who shown him as far as karka and the other things that the Mishnah had mentioned that there's no way not to them. Does that mean there's no way not no matter how large the overpayment is, or is there a nah also like this behema and magolus according to Rabbi Yehuda when he pays more than twice what they're supposed to be worth? We discussed the other day. Tosfos had learned that a nah would apply to karka under those circumstances, that if he overpays more than twice the value of the karka, and then we said there are other rishonim, the Raivan and other rishonim, who say that actually no, by them there would never be any nah, no matter how much the overpayment is, even if it's much more than twice the amount. Again, that's all according to that. So that's as far as karka, according to everybody. And here we're saying as far as behema and magolus specifically, and say betorla specifically according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara continues. Tanya, we learn in a brisa. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer. He was more. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says that a nah doesn't apply to. Also, during wartime, when a person sells a horse or a sword, or chatitim, which in Rashi says means a shield, ein lahem a nah, then a nah doesn't apply to those things. Because a person's life depends on them. So in other words, then a person would be willing to overpay for them, even if it's far more than the actual value of it. It's interesting. Lahavdil in American law, we would call that price gouging, and we would say he's not supposed to do that. But here, the Gemara is saying there's not a problem with it. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, anyway, the halacha is not like him. But according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, he would say we're not worried about price gouging for kert because chaye nefesh depends on them. Then therefore you can charge whatever you want from them for them, because a person is going to be willing to buy them at whatever price in order to be able to protect his life. Okay. Mishnah says, Keshtem sha'ina b'mecha homemko. Here we've been talking about, since the middle of the parak, we've been talking about the dinim of ina as far as buying and selling. So now the Mishnah says there's another kind of ina as well. In the Psukim, in Parashas Bahar, that talk about ina, first, it mentions about buying and selling. When you sell or you buy, when you sell to a fellow yid or you buy from a fellow yid, then there shouldn't be any ayna. A few pesukim later, the Torah again repeats, don't wrong, each one of you should not wrong the other. That's talking about ayna's dvari. That's talking about wronging somebody verbally, and that's going to be the subject of our Mishnah. So, the same way as ayna applies to buying and selling, the same way ayna also applies to verbal, to saying or doing something that's going to hurt somebody's feelings. Which there was a number of examples. for example, lo yomer lebekama chayfet zeh, you shouldn't ask a storekeeper or anybody for that matter, how much are you selling this thing for? When you're not actually planning to buy, because then the guy is going to feel bad. He thought he's going to make a sale, and then he's not. Sometimes there might be other people who are interested in it as well, and they see that you're interested, and therefore they hold back, and now he lost potential customers. So this would be included in a Nas Devarim. A practical example of that is nowadays you have many times a person will go into a store and price something, and then will go and look for the same thing online. So that would be an example of the Nas Devarim we're saying over here. Another example, Imhoya Bal Teshuva. If your fellow Yid is a Baal Teshuva, lo yomel es chor ma'asech harishon. Don't tell him, hey, remember what you used to do. Remember all those averas that you used to do before you did Teshuva. Now, Rabbeinu Yohonasan points out an interesting point. If the guy is not a Baal Teshuva, then you are allowed to mention his averas to him so that he will, if he hasn't done Teshuva yet, so that he'll do Teshuva. So you're allowed to do that to motivate him to do Teshuva. But if you already did Teshuva on them, then you have no business mentioning it to him. Another example, if the person that you're talking to is a son of Gerim, don't tell him, remember what your ancestors used to do, all the different kinds of Averis that your ancestors used to do. The Ger lo son of lo sochotzenu, as the Pasuk says, don't wrong and don't oppress a Ger. And in fact, as the Gemara is going to explain, when a person mistreats a Ger like that, he's over on an extra Isser above and beyond what he's over with a regular Yid. In a similar vein, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that even a descendant of Gerim, up to 10 generations, don't make fun of Goyim in his presence because he has a certain sensitivity. He knows that he's descended from Goyim, that his ancestors became Gerim, and therefore he feels a certain affinity to them, and therefore you shouldn't speak badly of Goyim in his presence. So now Maharsha points out there is a distinction over here. When it comes to the Mishnah doesn't mention a ger himself. The Mishnah is mentioning a ben ger, because by a ger himself, when you tell him schor ma'asecha rishonim, actually Maharsha points out that can be a compliment. That you're telling him, look at that. That you used to be a goy and you were so brave and you became a ger. As opposed to a Baal Teshuva, to begin with, had the mitzvahs. You can't say that you can't really say you were so brave to do the right thing. To begin with, you had those mitzvahs. You, a ger, on the other hand, came voluntarily. And a ben ger also, he himself wasn't the one who was this guy, or his parents were. So therefore, to mention it to him would be onah. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Tana Rabban, lo sonu ishas amiso. When the Pasuk says a yid should not wrong his fellow yid, by nas dvarim, akos medaber, that second Pasuk is talking about a nas dvarim. After omer by nas dvarim, in ela by nas moment. So you're saying it refers to a nas dvarim, maybe not. Maybe it's another time talking about a nas dvarim. Maybe it's another time talking about a nas moment. No, true, omer, few psukim early, but it says, v'chisim kuro mimkro la'misecha. When a few psukim earlier, it says when you buy from your fellow yid, then you shouldn't do enough. How do I know a smaman omer? So I know a smaman has already been stated. Ha mani makayma sodi wishes hamiso by nas dvarim. It has to be referring to a nas dvarim, because Tosfos says now sometimes we do have. We'll just say okay, it means that you're over on two lavin. But whenever possible, we try not to do that. We try to darshin an extra phrase in a pasuk, rather than saying that it just means an extra lab. So here, therefore, the Braisa is saying it means a nas moment. And the Braisa gives some examples similar to our Mishnah. Okay, it's that imhoya bal teshuva. If the other guy was bal teshuva, al yomel eschor ma'asecha rishonim. Don't tell him. Remember what you used to do. Another imhoya ben gerim al yomel eschor ma'aseh avisecha. If he was a ben gerim, don't tell him. Remember what your ancestors used to do. Tosfos, by the way, points out there's a loizu afzu. It's a greater chiddush. Not only don't mention to what he himself did, but don't even mention what his ancestors did. And again, Maharsha says, tell him himself, remember that you used to be a goy and you voluntarily came in and became a yid. That could be a good thing to tell him. Obviously, it'll depend on the tone of voice in which you tell it to him and all. But to tell him that remember what your ancestors did, where he had no choice in the matter, then that would be a nostalgia. Another example, imhoya ger balumot Torah. Another example, if he himself is a ger and he's coming to learn Torah, al yomalo, you can't tell him. This mouth that used to eat nevelos and trefus, creepy, crawly creatures, which are very disgusting. And now you're coming to learn Torah that was given from the mouth of Hashem himself. Meaning, in other words, you're going to say, Marashah says these kinds of things are especially disgusting. And you're going to tell them that same mouth, you're going to now learn the Torah that was given from Hashem's mouth. That would be a nasty bottom. What are you doing bringing up such a thing to him? Another example, if Yisurim are coming on a fellow Yid, or Imhoyu Chaloyin Boyin Olav, or if sicknesses were coming on him, or Rahman al Thani, burying his children passed away in his lifetime. You don't say to a person the way that Eev's friends said to him after Eev suffered all the disasters that happened to him. He lost all his wealth and he lost his possessions, and he lost his, and his children were killed. So his friends, his three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and then Sophar, came to comfort him. And afterwards, so Eov starts with a whole speech complaining about why was I ever born, and cursing the day he was born. And then each of them gives him a speech as an answer, and Eov responds back. And that those debates make up the bulk of Sefer Eov. So one of the first things that the first friend, Eliphaz, says to him, "Hallo, you oscha kislasecha." Isn't your fear your kisla? Now, there's a number of possibilities what kisla means. Rashi on the Pasuk explains that it means something like foolishness. Like you've been fearing Hashem in a very foolish way. Like you're only doing it in order to receive reward from Hashem. And look at that. Now it turns out that it's not even working out for you. So Rashi over there understands the word kisla secha to mean that you were doing it in a foolish way, that you were doing it, you were pretending to be a Yorei Shamayim and you really weren't. Tosfos explains over here that means meloshen bitochen, like you all this time you were fearing and trusting in Hashem, but now you seem to not, that now you seem to be, that now you're complaining so much. Different other mefarshim on the pasuk have different other possibilities. It can mean also, for example, that Eliphaz is telling him all this time you were fearing Hashem only because you trusted that because of that Hashem is going to do good for you. Anyway, the point is, he continues, tikvascha, your hope, and the fact that you were perfect in your ways. But Eliphaz continues, remember now, when did it ever happen that an innocent person was completely lost? In other words, in effect, he's telling him that you're obviously not such a tzaddik if such disasters happen. And the halo yud oscha kislasecha, depending on how you learn it, may also be, as Tosfos and as other mefarshim are learning, means that to begin with, your yiras shemayim was only superficial, and it was only in order to get schar, and not that you genuinely trusted in Hashem. Marsha gives yet another explanation. The word kislasecha can also be related to the word ksil, which among other things means a mazel in shemayim. So you were yorei, hello yor osfa, you were fearing Hashem, kislasecha, because your mazel was good. And that was tikvascha, you were hoping that Hashem will continue to do you good, and therefore b'sayim derachecha, because of that you were acting in a perfect way. Now, all of a sudden, when everything's going bad, then you're complaining and thinking that everything is controlled by mazel, so now you're acting wrongly, where until now, your yiras shemayim was only because your mazel was good. So this is an example of a nasty bottom to talk to him like that, to talk to him and to make it sound like his, like, and then to accuse him of false Yiras Shemayim and to say that you must be guilty, otherwise Hashem wouldn't be punishing. So that's all an example of a Nastavar. Another example, if donkey drivers are coming and asking you for grain, donkey drivers back then were like truck drivers now, they're the ones who transport grain and other goods from one place to another. Don't tell them, go to Pliny to buy from him, because he sells grain, and you know that this guy never sold grain, so now it's going to be a gnaw for the person himself. He's going to be embarrassed when these people come and ask him to sell them grain, and he has to tell them, I don't have any. And they themselves are going to be embarrassed that they went there for nothing. So all that would be a gnaw. Rabbi Yehuda, Yitla, Inav, Alamekach, Bishar, Shein, Ledarim. Rabbi Yehuda says another example of Enostavarim. We said before to ask the storekeeper how much something is worth, and then you're not planning to buy it. Rabbi Yehuda is adding even to look at the thing, to gaze at it as if you're planning to buy it when you don't have money to buy it. It's the same thing, in other words, that the storekeeper is going to think that he has a sale over here, and it turns out that not, and potential and other prospective customers are also going to think you're looking at it and you probably plan to buy it, and they're going to hold back, and therefore he's going to lose a sale. Now the Braisa continues, Shadayah Dover Muscle Lay. All of this is given over to the heart. In each of these cases, you could have a person is genuinely doing this. A person genuinely asks the storekeeper for a price, and then he realizes afterwards, you know what, it's too expensive, or I can't afford it, or I don't really need it, or whatever. And the same thing with each of these other things. There could always be an excuse that why I did it. So it's given over to the heart. Whenever you have a mitzvah that depends on the heart, that depends on what you're thinking in your heart, then it says, you should fear Hashem, meaning in front of other people, you may get away with an excuse that I genuinely meant this, or I didn't realize that there's a problem with this or whatever. But Hashem knows the truth, so therefore don't think that you can get away with it. The Braisa, so thus far the Braisa. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yochan Meshum Rav Shim Ben Yochai, Godol, Einas Dvarim, Me Einas Mammon. In fact, Einas Dvarim is worse than Einas of money. Shezeh Nehmer Bav Yerei Sem Alekecha, Vezeh Nehmer Bav Yerei Sem Alekecha. Because we see that when it comes to Einas Mammon, it doesn't say Yerei Sem Alekecha, but by Einas Dvarim it does. Meaning, in other words, we see that the severity of it is much greater than Hashem is saying, I'm going to know the truth of what you're doing. Rabbi Loza says there's another reason Einas Dvarim is worth. Zeb Gufay Zeb Mamayna, because Einas Dvarim affects the person's actual body. He feels bad. He feels a physical pain in his body. Zeb Mamayna, and the other one is only his money. Now, to be sure, we learned, Tosfos points out, we learned at the end of Bava Kamma, we said that a person steals even a pruta from somebody else is as if he stole his soul. Because sometimes that pruta may be the last money that he has, and now he doesn't have any money, more money to buy food. But most people, it's not like that. So therefore, for most people, mammon is not quite as serious as gufay. And Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni points out another point. Zen nitan lishavin, v'zen nitan lishavin. Einas mammon, you can always, you defrauded somebody in the price of something, you can always give him back the extra amount. When it comes to einas dvarim, you can never really give it back. Even you ask the guy Mechila, but he still felt bad at the time, and there's no taking back the fact that he felt bad at that time. The Gemara continues, Tony Tana Kameda of Nachmetz, Kol Malvin Pnei Chaveda Berdavim, if a person whitens somebody's face in public, meaning he embarrasses him in public and causes his face to become pale, it's as if he's spilling blood. Rabin, by the way, the smag explains that would be where there's at least two other people present. So, you know, in other words, you have the one who's embarrassed, the one who's embarrassing him, and two other people. That's enough to be considered rabin. So we're saying that Amalvin Pnei Chaveh Radam Kilo Shofech Damim is as if he's spilling his blood. Amalei, sort of Nachmeitz says Sultana Shaper Ka'amr. What you're saying is very correct. It's very true. That's considered like shvichas damim. The chazina, like I've seen, or we see when a person is embarrassed, the ozel sunka va'asi chivra. The blood rushes to his face, and then the red goes away and is replaced by paleness. So literally, you've spilled his blood out of his face. So it can literally be considered shvichas damim. In fact, Ben Yehoyada says, why dom mim in the plural? Because every time he remembers about it, he's going to be embarrassed again. And every time he sees the people that he was embarrassed from, he's going to be embarrassed again. So it's literally shofech dom mim many, many times. Omalei Abaya Rav Dimi. So Abaya, in this connection, asks Rav Dimi, in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, what mitzvah, what midah are they particularly careful? Rav Dimi used to regularly travel back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Babel, so he knew what people do in Babel. Rav Dimi answers, "Ba'achvuri abi." They're extra careful with not being malbin pnei chaveira. De Amar Rav Chanina, And the reason they're so careful is based on what Rav Chanina says. Everybody goes down to Gehenim, chutz mishloisha, with the exception of the following three. And before you can even finish, the Gemara interjects. What do you mean? What do you mean? Everybody, all Jews go to Gehenim? No, Ela Ema, what it means is, kola yodin the Gehenim olim, means anybody who goes down to Gehenim comes up from there soon enough, or right away, even, because a yid, as the Gemara mentions at the end of Chagiga, the fire of Gehenim has no power over a yid, chutz mishloisha sheyodin ve'ein olim, with the exception of three people who go down there and don't come up. Meaning, Tosfos says, doesn't mean they never come up. It means that they stay there for a prolonged period of time. The Elohim, and they are as follows. Habo'al Eishas Ish, a man has relations with an Eishas Ish. So he's going to stay in Gehenim for a certain period of time. Something that Tosfos says that would be 12 months. When a person embarrasses somebody else in public, Rear Tosfos says two possibilities. The Gemara may mean that such a person never comes out of Gehenim, or it can mean he also comes out of there after 12 months. And the third one, where a person gives an ugly nickname to somebody else. So the Gemara asks, Machana, Aina Malbin, well, doesn't that amount to the same thing as Malbin Pnei Chaveira Barabin? And by the way, why Taka should it be so serious that we say that it's worse than a Ritzeach, for example, or Ritzeach who's saying goes down into Gehenim for a moment? Here we're saying this person goes down there for a prolonged period of time. Rabbeinu Yonah explains in Shari Tshuva, because a Ritzeach realizes how badly he acted. So they were, on the other hand, a Malbin Pnei Chaver Rabbim doesn't realize how bad it was. He rationalizes it can't have been that bad. The guy shouldn't have taken it so much to heart, etc. And therefore his punishment in Gehenim is a lot more severe. Anyway, so the Gemara asked them, the Machana Shem Machaveiro, if he's calling a derogatory nickname to somebody else, what's so bad about that? Not what's so bad, but isn't that the same thing? Isn't that the same thing as Malbin Pnei Chaveiro Barabim? And the answer is, Afogabde Dosh Bebe Shmei. We're talking about even when the person is used to this nickname already. People have already called him by this name before, and he's already gotten sort of used to it, so therefore he's not turning pale every time. Nevertheless, it's still also to do that because you're intending to embarrass him, and therefore that's included in this category. So now, Rav Dimi was saying, the Jews of Eretz Yisrael were particularly careful with all of this to avoid these kinds of things. So the Gemara goes and continues on with the severity of being Malbin Pnei Chaveira Barabim and related topics, but that will be in next daf of Gemara, Blessed Hashem.